The Gerontological Society of America, Meaningful Lives as We Age.
Welcome to our podcast series on aging in developing countries. I'm Barbara Bowers, Emerita Professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison School of Nursing. This presentation is part of a larger podcast series that provides insights into how culture, competing population, health priorities, political conflict, resource limitations all influence older people, families, and paid caregivers in six developing nations. When we've put together a trajectory of developing countries from very low income to high income developing countries. So why do we do this? Well, I might be interested to know that out of the estimated 2 billion older adults who will represent 22% of the global population in 2050, 80% will be living in developing countries. I think that's a surprise to most people who thought this was a problem of developed countries. The impact of population aging is felt pretty universally across the world, but it's been well studied in wealthier developed countries. We know a lot less, though, about what the experience is like and how developing countries have responded to aging, especially in the lower income developing countries. So this rapid population aging really represents a shift from predominantly infectious diseases to chronic illnesses and the sort of things that you associate with older people. And this is because of the rapidity of the shift. This has really left a lot of developing countries in a very difficult position and not much time to prepare for the impact and the consequences. We've gone from the Millennium Development Goals, really focusing on maternal child health and infectious diseases, to now a shift, which WHO has certainly recently recognized, of really providing guidance and increased focus on what's happening with older adults. And this is also in the context of countries where the family is really considered the primary support for older adults for all of the care. The family is certainly important in every country, but in developing countries, the families in many cases are really the only source of support. So today we have a presenter from Ghana. We're delighted to have Dr. Abudu Birisborn. Dr. Abudu Birisborn has over a decade of nursing experience working in both rural and urban communities in Ghana. She's a recent PhD graduate of the Lawrence Bloomberg Faculty of Nursing at the University of Toronto in Canada. Dr. Abudu Birisborn will share her insights about caregiving, caregivers, and older people in Ghana. She's also going to talk about who's most likely to provide care, the type of care that older people receive, whose role it is, and what sort of preparations the academy and the government has been involved in. So now let me say a little bit about Ghana. Ghana is located on the west coast of Africa. It's considered a low-income developing country, but has experienced really quite rapid economic development over the past decade. Ghana has a population of about 30 million people. It's a multi-religion constitutional democracy. And Ghana has made a real commitment to providing universal access to healthcare, although it's still struggling to find sufficient funding to support this. They've made considerable progress. Of course, this is no different than most countries, including developing countries, that are all struggling with funding healthcare in general and certainly care for older populations. Life expectancy in Ghana is 71 years, and they have a pretty young population. Only 3.2% of the population is over 65. And in most developing countries, as in most developing countries, the fertility rate in Ghana continues to decline. Although the population is pretty youthful, they've maintained a relatively high fertility rate. And this is despite the rise in the elderly cohort. So basically, the birth rate has not declined, but people are clearly living longer than they were in the past. The growth of the older population is occurring at the same time that people are really living into old age and that family structures are declining, are really stretched. Women are increasingly needed to work in paid jobs outside the home. So traditional caregivers are, in many cases, no longer available. And as in other developing, especially low-income countries, many young professionals have left the country for opportunities in more developed countries. So that's sort of a little bit of an introduction to some of the challenges that they face. Dr. Jing Wang, an assistant professor at the University of New Hampshire, will moderate the discussion with Dr. Abudu Birisborn.
Hello, Diana. It's our great pleasure to have you here and share with us your insights into long-term care in Ghana. So first of all, Could you please give us an overview of how Ghana and Ghanaians are caring for their aging population?
So for older people in Ghana, they are mainly cared based on our social and family structure systems, because society expects younger ones to be responsible for older adults. Our younger ones are often told by older adults or either relatives, older adults in the community, or their neighbors that we have taken care of you for your teeth to erupt. And so it's your responsibility to take care of us to lose our teeth, you know? So then the responsibility shifts mainly on younger adults for caring for older people. And this also, we rely on the extended family structure where brothers, sisters, uncles, cousins all come together to support the care of older people. And so support can be either financial assistance, through remittances, or physical, like a simple act of taking another adult to the hospital, supporting them in their health care, like bathing or feeding. And sometimes you can just be, just by sitting down with them and talking to them for running errands when they need it. It's the kind of support some older people expect from younger ones. So older adults' responsibility mainly relies on the family. And sometimes neighbors or community members are coming to help, especially in rural settings.
Thank you, Diana. What an interesting saying. So we have taken care of you for your teeth to erupt, so it's your responsibility to take care of us to lose our teeth. I can certainly relate to that when I consider the cultural context in Asian countries. So here's your question. Across the world, nursing homes are becoming more common, even in low-income developing countries. Could you tell us about the development of nursing homes in Ghana, where they're located, who is cared for in the setting, and how Ghanaians generally feel about nursing homes?
We are not so open to the idea of nursing homes. And this is also culturally rooted, because you are expected to take care of your older adults. It's perceived irresponsible for the younger person to take their relative into a nursing home. And then the extended family system is beginning to face that burden, that challenge of providing care for older people, mainly because younger ones would have to go to work, others have to go to school. And the question is, who stays at home to care for these older people that are at home, especially for those that have declining physical and cognitive function? So then the younger generations become more challenged or faced with a bigger issue about their own career, about their own families, as well as taking care of their older adult relatives. So families that are financially okay or financially stable sometimes would employ other people, seek assistance from unemployed family members to stay at home to take care of their older relatives or parents while they leave for work. Other times they pay family for strangers or people that just seek income. So they pay them to stay at home with their relatives while they go, and then they come back. So that shift system happens mostly with those who have income to make the payment. People are beginning to have a different understanding of what having nursing homes means, mainly because things are changing. Even though we have a structured social system and expectation, things are changing from the way they used to be 20, 30 years back. So more women would advocate for that. With some kind of training, people are beginning to see that it's not bad, especially for once the kind of nursing homes they call adult daycare, where you think that, okay, the mornings you drop off your older adult relatives, then when you go from work, you come and pick them up. So that would gradually be something to look out for.
Can you describe how decisions are made about who will care for aging family members in need of daily support?
Those that extended family members that are not employed, but then they call those older, or they perceive the older adult as their aunties or uncles, not directly their parents. So when they are taking care of these older people, they expect their children or other family members to contribute and take care of them, for helping take care of the older people. Because in this case, it would have been everybody's work, but I am at home, so everyone must pay me somehow. In terms of remittances to take care of the older person. You know, so mainly in the social and the family structure, this is the main way we take care of older patients or older people in our homes in Ghana here. So sometimes the oldest in the family would just seek out or reach out to one or two of the younger ones or even other people that are not employed to say, would you mind taking care of being at home because you are not working? Maybe we are in the city at the end of the month, we'll find something for you. So while you stay here, or they go to the village, the rural communities, to look for someone within the family and the extended family system to come and live with them. So that the agreement will be, okay, live with us, especially these are mostly female. So live with us. As you live with us, support these older adults. The thing may be, we would, at a point, we would help you to go back to school, or we would help you find employment for yourself or develop some skill for yourself at our cost. But now we just want to take care of our mother, our father, while we work. So it's like someone benefits somehow at some point. That reciprocity is just something we are all looking out for, you know. And often people expect that. So sometimes they may not necessarily say that, do something for me, but they expect you to kind of just show gratitude in reciprocating the kindness or the sacrifice that a person has given to take care or support an older adult in their family. In Ghana, we don't have specific units for older people. We have for pediatrics, we have for maternity, but we don't have for older people. So older people are often, you find them in the emergency departments, you find them in the medical wards, you find them in the surgical wards, just like any other person from 13 years and above, all in the same ward. So one of the things is this, for older people, so if you are not able to, you are not having a family member to support you, apart from being at home, you go to the hospital. Now, the hospital is the first place for every older person, the acute care that you have to receive medical and nursing care services. Now, aside the hospital, there are other private individuals that have set up nursing homes. And this is only to the capital in Greater Accra. It's only in Greater Accra and it's somewhere, which means that you should only be rich to be able to afford this. And then most of those that also access private facilities, persons who have relatives that have lived outside Ghana, they have had a different understanding of nursing homes. And so there are those who will take their relatives to nursing or long-term care facilities. So individuals that have their, for instance, an older person who has all their children working and those majority are outside of Ghana, they'll tend to let their parents live in this home and then they reimburse or make payments to the hospital directly, knowing that their aging relative is being taken care of by professionals. So, but this is only accessible to people in the capital, in the city. So in the rural settings, there aren't any long-term care or nursing homes for them. They basically have to live at home. And if there isn't anyone around, you just find them living by themselves, but neighbors will usually help them with food, help them when they need assistance. So that's one of the biggest challenges we have in caring for older adults here. So we've reduced the care of older adults just bathing and feeding and serving medications. Mostly at home, that is what is done. So when it comes to reducing pressure sores and then prevention of accidents, usually, you don't have family caregivers that have been trained to do this or to identify this. And unfortunately, sometimes at the hospitals, let's say they go for admission at this charge, sometimes they are not even educated on how to prevent these things at home. So it is just learning through, like, try and error. The person is bedridden, let's just bath, or they've seen how the older person assisted in bed bath at the hospital. So they try to just follow, just do something. Their main thing is just the comfort, but whether they are following technical advice to ensure that no accidents are caused through the process, no, that kind of training is not provided. We don't have post-specialization training for nurses in gerontology. I have heard there are geriatric training for medical doctors, geriatricians. at the Ghana Dental and Medical School. But for the last, I'm not so sure about the exact data, but I read that they don't have a lot applying for the program and geriatrics in the Ghana Medical Dental and Surgeons, like their college. But with nursing, we don't even have a post-specialization program for gerontology. Recently, I spoke with Relators for Nursing Education as part of my PhD, and they mentioned that there is something in the pipeline. This is always a saying that, excuse me to say, government leaders and politicians often say there's something in the pipeline. They are planning to institute gerontology programs for nursing, but they also raise the concerns of the availability of faculty. You know, so once you don't have faculty, then you can't even start the program. But the first step taking to even train the faculty in the first place, and they range between diploma and certificate nurses that have been trained. And then you not also have, but then these nurses must be registered with the council for licensing to be practiced. So mostly they are the people that work with these nursing homes, aside the cleaners and administrative staff that will be there to support them with other things. So but then whether they have retraining to care for other people specifically, I don't think they have that. They just make the assumption that once you are a trained nurse, you should be able to take care of the older care. We have nursing assistants in Ghana, like as part of our health system, but we don't have them as personal care workers that are assigned to specific patients. So the nursing assistant is there to just assist the nurse, like the routine, everyday work, but not specific to an older adult or specific patients. So when it comes like that and the nurses are not adequate, they tend to focus their attention on the younger ones who they perceive will help them to carry out their routine processes fast, compared to the older person when the nurses perceive or assume that working for them will be time consuming. And so let's finish with the older, the younger ones before we come. And before they know it, their shift ends and they have to leave. And somehow may not necessarily provide the care or support service that they have to do for the older adults.
So internationally, there is increasing commitment to person-centered care or care that is as responsive as possible to what is most important to the persons receiving care. And there are cultural issues that require person-centered care to be more culturally sensitive. And what are your thoughts about person-centered care in the context of long-term care in Ghana?
Yeah, I think person-centered care is very important. Again, because I'm a nurse, person-centered care is very important. And culturally, it's something that we are actually seeking and looking out for. But our healthcare system isn't promoting that. So the way the system is structured, the routine approach is more, the patient-centered would kind of impact your routine care because you are being measured by how what you have done, what you're expected to do for the whole unit and not necessarily specific patients. Because you go to a hospital and you'd have like two or three staff nurses in a ward that has close to like 40 patients, mixed all ages across, and just maybe two nursing assistants. So then it makes it difficult to have a specific patient-centered approach, nursing care here. So then the nurses tend to work based on, so like an everyday thing would be for you to go around, there are changes, and then you just, okay, I'm taking three or four of the patients, you are in charge of this group of patients, then you try to section the work or divide it among the staff that are there. But you are all looking for the routine staff and not necessarily the patient-specific needs. For person-centered care, like we all generally know, that assessing the needs of older people and providing the nursing care services to meet those specific needs. Now, once you begin to assess the needs of these older people and you've identified them, you will need to make decisions with their family members, with their caregivers, in order to meet those needs if you have identified them. Now, one big challenge with that approach would be that because we are a communal society, we are more patriarchal. so that the head of the family is the one who makes decision and not everybody. And then, so if the head of family isn't there, then the next person will take the decision. But sometimes the most educated person takes the decision in the family, and other times the one highly socially, one who is financially stable or one with a higher socioeconomic status would then take the decision, because whatever decision you take, you should be willing to face the consequences from all family members. So that idea of shared decision-making would be the challenge with patient-centered approach here, because the older persons depend again on family members. And then so if the family members are not, they don't all agree on certain things, then it will be difficult to provide some care needs. Autonomy is not something you really see as a concept that will fit in our culture. You can be autonomous in your personal life, but even some decisions that you have to take would affect other family members. It's for us to be guided that whatever decisions we make affects other persons in their families. And so you would want the head of the family or two or three elders of the family to make decisions. Now, for older people, sometimes they are just helpless. Other people make the decisions and they even leave the older people out, because one may think that I am providing more financial assistance than another family member, and so I should have a bigger say. Another person would think that I am directly at home taking care and doing all the physical work, so I should have a bigger say. And so that conflict becomes an issue, and the older adult is just left with, who should I listen to? Well, so sometimes the older person is rather confused. If you look at who sends or who provides more financial assistance, that takes care of your bills, your feeding and everything. And then you look at the one who is at home supporting you with your feeding, supporting you with your fiscal assistance. So then the older person, if they are able, are always confused, and they end up going by, we have a proverb, listen to the older adults or the grown-ups always have the best ideas. So for younger ones, you usually would not have so much to say. Age is very important for us here. So that the one older than, so if I'm 35, I should be able to listen to my 38-year-older brother or sister. Even though we may disagree, but eventually the older adult will say, look, you know you are young, just listen to the grown-up. You know, so it's just that boundaries of where should I align myself to. And then sometimes they just look at the culture, look for peace to exist, for us to just move on as a family. So they try to tell one person to just let things go and then listen to one or two of them so that everybody can take it. To feel important, family members are allowed to spend a day or two with their older adult relative in nursing homes. I'm not sure how that is done in the Western world, but what I would rather thing to include, because of our communal way of living, once in a while, a family member or two can just spend some time or a night with their older adult relative in the nursing home, just to let them feel that sense of family, that like the sense of family is not completely taken away. Not that it's like they are not just surrounded by people, professionals, but sometimes one or two of their family members just spend a night or two with them, instead of the limited times for visiting and then leaving.
Yes, Diana, these are particularly interesting. And what do you see things going? Do you see Ghana going in the direction of how the West has addressed caring for older adults? Or like you think that it might go into a different direction?
So what I think we are moving towards a Western way of life now. More people are becoming so nuclear family-centered. Everyone is trying to, even though the nuclear family-centered approach or structure is growing, with more older people left in the rural setting or rural homes, what I see would happen in the future would be that we may end up looking a little more like the Western world, with nursing homes, with an acceptance of long-term care services, or nursing homes or retirement homes. Is something that I see may happen, because the private nursing homes were just about two of them in 2014, and there are now about six of them or seven of them. And so people travel out, they have a different perspective and they come to try to reinvest in this and then take the opportunity of social media to educate people, to bring their relatives there. And then there are also some NGOs or church members, group of Christian or Muslim religion, look, let's just step out and take care of an older person, A or B. So once, sometimes they identify older people that live by themselves, they try to see how best can we help them. So if there's a place like this, then they would have taken such an older person to that place. So I think that in the long term, we would gradually look like the Western world. But now I think our social system is kind of one of the best that we have, because even though it has its problems, I think what we can do is just to rebuild capacity to increase home care nursing services, you know, to have nursing or agencies that will promote home care. And these people should be trained to reach out to older people at homes, to their families, so that we still maintain this concept of aging in place. And even though there will be conflicts within the families, but then they will also receive professional caregiving at home and still enjoy their old age at home and with family and friends.
Right. So what research would you like to see conducted in Ghana? What do you think we need to know more about in order to improve care for older adults?
Right. One of the main things that I think, for me personally, I've always asked this question, who cares for the caregiver? Because we're like our society and we have people to take care of the older person at home. Others say, I am the immediate caregiver. You are not sure. So who cares for them? Like, who supports them? Because the caregiving process is challenging for a lot of people. Right. So who cares for the caregiver would be something for me, like caregivers' experiences, their expectations, what kind of support they need, would be something I would explore. I did that briefly as part of my master's study, but it's something I want to extend again to see if things have changed. And then the other thing that I would really want to look at is what's the prevalence of dementia in Ghana. When I wanted to start my PhD, I was looking at areas to explore. And I noticed that in most of our hospitals, we had older people. Having read about dementia later on in life, I saw they were presenting some signs of dementia, but we were not diagnosing them as dementia in our hospitals. And so it would really be interesting for me to see what's the prevalence of dementia in Ghana and how are dementia patients being taken care of in Ghana or any other low and middle income country that is similar to Ghana that we can learn. Because most of our physicians do not diagnose dementia. Is it because they actually don't know what dementia is or what to look out for in dementia to diagnose the patient? But everyone just say that it's aging. Yeah, it's normal. So you should accept that these are normal things to accept in older people when they are presenting with disorientation or delirium or having loss of memory or just all those signs. They just say it's normal. It's normal with old people. But some of these things are not normal, you know. So then it raises the question of health workers really prepared, you know, because the population is constantly increasing. And here we are not so interested in gerontology or geriatrics, nurses and medical doctors. So how are we actually ready? One other thing that I would like to collaborate with other researchers would be how to develop evidence-based guidelines that are context-specific and culturally sensitive to care for older people. Because now we have old people in our hospitals, in acute care settings that we have, and we take care of them just like any other person. But we know that they need to have a certain kind of care. And so what are the guidelines that can fix this particular setting would be something I'd rather want to explore in the future.
Thank you, Diana. And I think our last question is about ageism. So ageism and ageist attitudes are found in every country. Developed and developing ageist beliefs come from many places. Could you please describe how ageism is expressed in Ghana? What is unique to Ghana?
So one of the things is that there are those superstitious beliefs. Again, they fall within culture. and social settings and beliefs. It's unfortunate that individuals at homes who tend to have unfortunate experiences or experience difficulties in their careers or in their social life, they tend to look for someone to blame. And the most easiest person to blame is often the older adult woman in your house. The unfortunate or the sad thing is that even our language and some of our tribes have common sayings that promote negative views about older people. So for instance, if you have an unfortunate incident, like in the tree, they'll say, "Ufiebeye," like the witch in your home is not good. So then you're experiencing such an unfortunate incident. Now, once they say "Ufiebeye," it means that everyone's attention is drawn to the older person in your home, because we perceive witches to be older people and mostly older women. And unfortunately, older widowed women. You know, so it goes on and on. It's a way we try to look for people to blame, try to just to satisfy our own choices, or rather justify our choices by rather blame someone for our failures. The most or the easiest person to often do that or point fingers to is the vulnerable older person at home. Now, in some communities, mostly in the northern part of Ghana, then we have the witches' camp. They are often called, we have the Gambara witches' camp. I think there are about two witches' camps in the country. These witches' camps are run by a priest in the community who is also an older man. So it's an older man who says that if you are a witch, or someone tries to identify or point fingers or call you a witch, the community will bring you to them. This older man, his role is to exorcise you from the witchcraft and then to take you back to reintegrate you again. So usually, how would one identify that you are a witch? They have their cultural beliefs of whatever they do and what signs they see to say that you are actually a witch. And then you'll be moved from your home to live in the witch camp. So there are people that have been in the witch camps for more than 2 years, for more than 3 years, and their families are even embarrassed to even go or talk about them. So NGOs have come to say that these witch camps are not appropriate. Let's find a way to dissolve them, because most of these women often coerce to confess. Because in the society where they are pointed out as witches and like that, then they just say, "Look, yes, I'm a witch. I have done A, B, and C." So others have argued that they are often coerced by the pressures to say that they are witches. In actual science, they are actually demonstrating some of the aging symptoms or changes. So most of the women that have been pointed as witches, for instance, the people have made an argument that they got up in the middle of the night and saw the old woman walking by herself naked. So the question is, when was she going in the middle of the night? Then people that are educated can say that, oh, this is probably someone who has dementia, who could not sleep or nocturia or have insomnia, and then came out in the middle of the night either to ease themselves or free their bladder, or even they are not even aware that it's the middle of the night themselves. So like a cognitive decline. But because of the limited knowledge that we have about aging and its challenges and what they present with, especially with cognitive functional and cognitive decline, we tend to point fingers at some of these things as witchcraft. Because again, the culture, we believe that witches only work at night. So if you see some of these things, then they tend to blame older people, especially older women. And sometimes, unfortunately, if you're not lucky, you can't even be lived. You know, so it's a big issue. It's a very big issue with witchcrafts and those superstitions about older women. But other religious leaders have come up. People have come up. The government has come up. They've condemned some of these beliefs. But it's deeply rooted in certain cultures. And it will take a long time to change that mindset. Well, it's gradually changing. People are getting more educated. The other thing is that people are getting more educated, because they've brought comparisons to say that for all those women that have been accused of witchcraft, and for the women or men that have been accused of unfortunate incidences in their families, if you look at their family structure, they are often very poor people. So others make an argument of why is it that a rich man's family, older adult family member, has never been accused of being rich? So then it brings another perspective to look at why those superstitious beliefs come in, the group of people that often have that kind of superstitious belief. So with that kind of different perspective being presented, people are beginning to have a different sense or a change of mind on how to perceive older people in our society.
Thank you so much, Dr. Wang and Dr. Abudu Birisborn, for a fascinating discussion on aging in Ghana and giving us a look at some of the challenges faced by Ghana and probably other low-income developing countries as the population really starts to age. Despite the vast differences in resources across high, middle, and low-income nations, we certainly share many of the same challenges. In terms of Ghana, we have heard that improving the workforce quality and developing educational programs targeted for care of older people and their caregivers is really at the forefront. You also talked about equity across sectors, regions, and genders, and that's certainly a challenge in many places. It'll be interesting to see how Ghana responds to this as the years go on. Something I found most interesting is the status and experiences of older women in some parts of Ghana. And interesting, while some of the circumstances that you described are different than in other countries, might be specific to Ghana, we're certainly all familiar with ageism and the impact of ageism on the lives and quality of life of older people and their caregivers. So while it might be unique in some ways to Ghana, it's certainly not unique to Ghana. Ageism is an issue that I think we struggle with across countries, developed and developing. So thank you for this great insight, and we wish you good luck in your career and fascinating discussion. Thank you.
The Gerontological Society of America was founded in 1945 to cultivate excellence in interdisciplinary aging research and education to advance innovations in practice and policy. For more information about GSA, visit geron.org. G-E-R-O-N.org.